Hey everybody, Chuck here. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that CritCon 2025 is live. Once again, we're hosting a game convention in Portland, Oregon this October 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Hilton Doubletree, right off the Max Line near downtown. Killscream is back with Killscream 4, a two-day tournament with two golden tickets on the line. It's 2 days this year, October 25th and 26th, with some amazing prize support as usual, and the Kill Team Cascadia Bounty Board for charity, as well as a painting contest to go along with it this year. This year on Friday, we also have Kill Team Doubles. You push two boards together and fight with your partner against another team, deal with shooting across boards, sharing command points with your partner, and battle through three rounds against two opponents. This year, we have a bunch of other game systems too, including Star Wars Shatterpoint, Star Wars Legion, Horus Heresy 30K, and Marvel Crisis Protocol. If you took some of the hobby classes last year, don't worry. Painting classes return this year, along with Dan Osborne and Useless Wizard from last year. We have former Privateer Press studio painter Matt DiPietro and Portland local Selnar teaching classes Friday through Sunday. We also have discounted rooms available at the Hilton Doubletree. You can find all the info at CascadiaTabletop.com or in the show notes. Tickets are on sale now. We hope to see you there this October. Come show Connor your feet. All right, Tyler, you were late. You know what that means.
Oh, I actually had something in mind.
Nope, save it till next week.
But it's relevant to this week.
Fine.
We're officially now 100% a Shadowheart and Warhammer simp podcast. So everyone get ready for that, because Shadowheart's now in Warhammer.
Who's Shadowheart?
You know that from Baldur's Gate. I don't know who
that is. Was that the actual intro, though?
Yeah, 100%. It was mostly just about how they, me and Max and a bunch of other people were talking about for the new Drakari Lady Malice. That's just Shadowheart. Anyone that's played Baldur's Gate 3 looks at that and it's like, yeah, that's Shadowheart. This says a Drakari. I mean, like,
is Shadowheart just Lady Malice?
I guess. I don't know. Is Lady Malice new?
No. Well-established character.
Got you. Have they ever had a model or not? Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, like, the model was old, you know, so it looked way different, but...
I've never played Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I mean, like, I played 1 and 2. Icewind Dale.
I started to play Icewind Dale. Torment. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Planescape Torment.
I wanted to like them, and actually I wanted to like Baldur's Gate 3, but I've got too much gaming ADHD and couldn't actually, like, get into it. I think something else. I do want to play it, because it's supposed to be amazing, and I could see why, I could find out why Connor has such a boner for Shadowheart, even though Shadowheart's apparently... not Connor's not Shadowheart's type. Is that the word?
Probably not. I'm not. No, I could make, you can make her either evil or good, like any good companion in a video game. So
if
you make
her a lesbian.
No, there's a lot of ship art though between her and another character, because they have like a love hate relationship.
No, gotcha. Well, welcome to the Vox Cascadia podcast, by the way.
Yeah, welcome.
You're supposed to put that part in the intro too.
Oh, whatever. People know what they clicked on the video. They know what we're called. Also, wait, did she have an old model? I can't find it.
Shadowheart?
No, Lady Malice.
Let me try to find it. But onwards, forwards. So while we do that, you know, searching is the most engaging part of the podcast.
It's fun to listen to. It's Google stuff. So,
Right.
We hear, not like we don't hear your typing enough already, buddy. So
I rarely type.
Bullshit. Actually, to be fair, between you and your wife typing, we get a lot of typing on the podcast.
It's mostly Sierra typing, but she's not in here today.
Neither with that mechanical keyboard. Get her a nice soft keyboard.
Nah, she likes her mechanical ones.
Yeah.
What were you saying, though?
Me? This is quality stuff. It's like we've been doing this for like 80 some odd episodes.
Yeah. Welcome to Kill Team Cascade, or no, Vox Cascadia.
That's for fuck's sake.
That's the other thing we do. Yeah. Hey, listen, we've been talking about Kill Team Cascadia because we got CritCon. Go buy tickets, everyone.
Yeah, CascadiaTabletop.com.
We're real tickets. Smooth. Polished.
Right, Jesus now. Christ. We are professionals.
Absolutely. Yeah. Number one professional Kill Team podcast.
86 now, episodes.
When I was on Kill Team Casuals with Ben recently, I called us Kill Team Adjacent. You know, we're not even achieving that this week.
You did call us Kill Team Adjacent. Also, thanks for the shout out. You shouted out that you were one of the hosts, but you didn't include the other hosts. Now, I know that I noticed that Battle Brothers Ben talked about Russ and Reese. I never once heard a Chuck or a Connor there, Tyler. So what's going on?
Damn, you know, there was
just a lot to cover right there. You know, a lot of
gave
excitement.
You notes. I guess apparently the notes I give you next time they have to put say Chuck and Connor. I want to hear my name. Come on.
That's fair. You know, valid criticism. I will improve. Thank you for that. I deserve that call out.
You know, I think you did great, Tyler.
Did you even listen to it?
Not yet. No.
Then fuck off. No, actually, I think you did great, and I'm just giving you shit about it. So
of course you are. You know, I think I did. Yeah. You know, my self assessment would be 7 out of 10.
I might give you a higher than that, 7.2.
Yeah, like, you know, I was here for like the encouragement from you. Yeah. Like I shot just like a little bit low.
Yeah.
You know,
no, so Tyler was on Kill Team Casuals, which is
the other KTC.
Yeah, the Sweat Lords that call themselves Casuals. It was a very good episode. It was fun to listen to you and Ben catch up. Actually, you guys are like bros, star-crossed lovers. Like, yeah, you can hear the like love in the air on that. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, go take a listen to it.
It's a lot of fun. Anytime. You know, we were chatting. You know, maybe we should try to make all of them come on to our show. Make that work sometime. You know, it'd be a little bit of a flex, but probably worth it.
Get the whole kill team, the whole KTC and KTC.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'd have to. I mean, we'd find a Monday because they record like Monday afternoon, and they're in three different time zones. That's their thing. We're just in three different zip codes, area codes.
Yeah, maybe we could do like a weekend or something.
We could do that
special recording. So
yeah,
be good time.
Yeah. Real quick, I have a correction to issue. From Nick, last episode, Connor said that most of our Patreon like us, but Nick wanted to make a caveat and a correction that's Connor, a lot of confidence ending the show with most of you Patreon like us. Don't presume anything about me. So
sorry, Patreons, to put words in your mouth. My bad.
Yes. So we think you hate subscribe and I fucking love it. Just yeah. Give me that $2 a month to hate subscribe to us.
No. You know, I mean, like, if we have any hate subscribers, DM me. Like, we'll bring you on. You can tell us why we suck.
Yeah, I mean, we usually tell you why we suck, but you can tell us why you think we suck, too.
For sure.
Is this some weird, like, kink or something you guys got?
No, but I think it'd be interesting.
Connor, don't talk about the kinks, we talked about this.
$15 tier, you know?
I mean, I guess we have talked about Connor's kinks enough, so, I mean.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's all out in the open. It's clear as day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for like a zoomer like he is,
you can tell. I mean, you can tell that. I mean, I've been in customer service and management for 27 years. I'm obviously like a masochist, so you can tell from that. Because on the regular, I get told how much I suck. And yeah, if I didn't,
you don't know what you're doing at your job and all that.
I don't know what I'm doing. Like my other bank does this, you know, when I was at Costco, they didn't do this or, you know, T-Mobile doesn't do this. And yeah, so I just, if I didn't enjoy it, I probably wouldn't be able to pay for this, frosty cold beverage I have right now.
What frosty cold beverage is that?
I got a Breakside Wanderlust actually in a Fort George cup.
Nice.
Okay. Nice. Nice. I'm drinking my cryo stash. Like,
yeah. Cool. Connor, what do you got?
Just water right now. I'm Baneborn. I drank a lot of soda earlier.
I actually had a Baja Blast this last weekend, the new like Midnight or whatever it is.
How was that?
It was interesting. It had I'm not a huge Baja Blast connoisseur, but I enjoyed it. It almost had like a little umami to it.
Interesting. Now, what would you, this is a little tangential, what would you describe? If you had to define umami. How would you define it?
Savory.
It's the same thing as savory, right?
Basically, but umami sounds like cooler.
Okay.
I think there's a different. There's different levels of savory and umami. I think things can be savory without having umami, and things can just be umami without being savory. Which I think the Baja Blast was. Yeah, I think it's just it's a little kind of umami. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what umami is. I don't think I've ever had that flavor.
Yeah, you have. It's MSG.
Side eye and a middle finger behind the back as my partner walks away from me right now.
Yeah, well, like, what's the context of this?
It's just like an earlier conversation. You know, like that's all.
Can you fill us in?
maybe after
all right.
Show.
All right, after show stuff.
Patreon special.
By the way, yeah, Vox Cascadia, patreon.com/VoxCascadiaPodcast. You can get, I don't even know if we've talked about what we do for our patrons. One, you get the episodes early. You usually get them a day or two early at least. We also do a 10-15 minute little like after show chat where we do more of what you've heard right now, but with more bullshit.
So. Yeah, there's like no kill team at that point.
Yeah, because we've done a lot of kill team at this point in the podcast. 9 minutes in, we've covered like a lot, you know, like
we covered one Warhammer related subject at least.
We did. We talked about another kill team podcast that actually talks about kill team.
Oh, and yeah, two mm-hmm. then because we did the podcast and a new model.
I mean, like the model mention was less than your like crush on Shadowheart, which honestly I don't see the resemblance.
Really? But I feel like I sent that to my friends that have played Baldur's Gate but aren't Warhammer. Even they were like, that's the Shadowheart.
I mean, the real question is, like, when you looked at that model, did you finish like you do with Shadowheart, or was it, like, harder than normal?
I fucking hate you so much. I don't even know.
you don't even know?
I don't even know how to respond to that.
I know.
Chuck, what was the topic for today's Kill Team-related conversation?
Well, so the homework we gave that I gave and then subsequently did not do was we were going to talk about the Canoptic
circle. So you didn't do the homework that you assigned?
No, because I figured we'd pivot, but then you actually did the homework and said that you could tell us all about the team. Therefore, I'm challenging you now to tell us all about the Canoptic circle, Connor.
Okay.
Bet. So we'll talk about approved ops next week.
No one cares about new ops. They're not even that actually they're pretty exciting, but that's not as cool as new models.
Yeah, which will be in our hands, in our grubby little hands this weekend, if you don't have them already.
Yeah, any time now.
Yeah, but some of you listening might already have it by the time you're listening.
Fuckers, who are you getting them from? Tell me. Let me get your...
I just meant maybe they listen on Saturday instead of the day we release.
No, I'm assuming they have them early and they have like the hookup. I know there's some people out there that do have the hookup. You know who you are. You know who you are.
Who? Mm-hmm.
I can't name imagine. Names. I'm not going to name names.
Oh, well, that's not fun.
Yeah. Well, we're not putting anyone on the...
I was going to say Barbara Bush.
Put out the Epstein list. So
yeah, that's the only list I want.
Yeah, pretty much. And then once we've got the Epstein list, then we could talk about the people that LGSs are getting them the plastic early. But
oh no, no, we don't do that. We don't narc here.
I mean, I won't narc if you know hook me up. It's called blackmail.
Fair.
Yeah. So you give me your source. I will go to your source, tell them I know about the source, and then they give me the plastic early, and everything's good.
Hell's my glue? Oh, yeah, true. I want that source.
Yeah. So let's talk Canoptic Circle. So, Connor, start off. What is let's talk about the faction, the racial, as they say on Kill Team Battle Kit. The faction rules for Canoptic Circle. The
racial?
Yeah, and actually, on it's a Spanish website.
Oh, so that makes sense. Yeah, the racial rules.
So talk about the obelisk node matrix.
All right. I'm not going to use the fucking terms. We all know what I'm about. But yeah, biggest thing that people are excited about, it's a Necron team without everyone reviving and healing all the time. So that's pretty cool. There's still a revive and still a heal mechanic, but that happens from an operative instead of this being their faction. Their faction rule is during the first strategic gambit phase, you get to put three little markers. And if you're on those markers, you get bonuses. Long story short, those markers have to be within 6 inches of at least another marker in order to get the bonuses. And if you have all three of them within six of the, like, so A is within six of B and C and so on and so forth, then you make a little like triangle or a zone of superpower where instead of just having to be in the line, anywhere within that gets you the bonuses. The big bonuses are because this team for the most part hits on fours, you get accurate too, which is pretty damn good. Question for you guys. Does accurate two mean you have to retain both, or could you say like I'd only want to retain one and then roll the other one for a crit?
You can retain up to two.
Okay, cool. That's good, because there's a couple of things where you want some definitely want some crits to fish for that. But then the other thing beyond accurate two is you just straight up add one to your APL stat while starting your turn either in that little zone or on the line. Chuck, how did I do?
Great. Yeah, I was bored just listening to you about it. So
yeah. Oh, thanks. I'm glad.
That's dead on. Like yeah. for what they do. No, I've been reading up on them. Honestly, I think they seem interesting.
Yeah, I feel like Chuck wanted to pivot because he didn't do it.
Problem.
Yeah. So my question with the obelisk known matrix. And if you guys watch the Can You Roll Crit video, every time he said matrix, he said obelisk node matrix, 4,700 times. So it sounds like, and we'll probably get to this. It sounds like you've got three tokens.
Yep.
And if they're within 6 inches of each other, they create like the matrix.
Mm-hmm. Neo shows up.
Now you can be, do you have to be the control range to be on it, or do you have to actually be like standing and touching the obelisk node matrix?
I think you need to be touching the matrix itself, kind of like how the Ravener tunnel works, where you need either be on the token or like in the lines in between the tokens.
Okay. Yeah.
So within, but not wholly.
Gotcha. Yes.
So this team though is it's considered what, a five operative team with
five operative team, because apparently that's all we're getting.
Yeah, so you got it's five operatives from now on. So
I like that. For the longest of time, we were like, oh, what's going to be the first five operative team? And now we've gotten three, essentially, within the last two boxes.
Three out of the last four, yeah. So you've got Connor, you're running the show. So what would you like to talk about next?
Geomancer. We all know what Necrons are about. They're all about crazy cool models that stand up and look really neat. Or not even stand up, float up. And so that's this guy's Cryptek. It's kind of like the same thing in Herotech Circle, but this team only gets one. It's a new one called the Geomancer. They're pretty cool. Base APL of 3, 6-inch save, or 6-inch move, 3-up save, 14 wounds. Standard Cryptek profile. They've got a pretty cool amount of abilities, but we'll just go through their basic weapons first. They've got a gun with two profiles. One that's essentially a super plasma. It's 4 dice on 3s, 4-5, piercing 1 built in. But then if you roll a crit, that's piercing crits 2. So I'm assuming that this becomes piercing 2. It doesn't stack because that'd be broken. But yeah, roll a 6 and now you've got a melta gun, kind of. That's a pretty cool profile with the accurate 2. I think this is one of the few times from the Matrix. I think that's one of the few times you're going to ignore that accurate 2 because you're definitely going to want to fish for crits when shooting that one. Otherwise, they've got like a blast attack type of thing called Tremorglaive Quake. 6 dice on 3s. 1-3 damage, blast 2, seek light and stun. So this seems like a profile you're going to want to use even in Marines, but especially on Into the Dark and Tomb World, where you'll probably have lethal 5 to fish for those crits and, more importantly, those stuns.
So it looks like he's also the Tremorglaive also comes into it in the melee portion too. 4 attacks hitting on 4s, 4-5 damage, severe shock and stun. So yeah. All about the Tremorglaive. By the way, Connor, plug your ears for a second. I got to talk to Tyler.
Okay.
Dude, Tyler, we just need to, from now on, like, I'm going to assign homework. You and I are going to fucking ignore it. And then the nerd is going to do all of it. And then we just sit back and, like, listen to him talk.
I mean, I did the homework too, though.
You did the homework too? Well, you can jump in here too.
I mean, you know, I mean, like, kind of. I kind of did the homework. Like, enough to wing it on the test.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. I actually studied Chuck because I actually am very interested in this team.
I told you to plug your fucking ears.
I unplugged them.
God damn it. Okay.
It hurt.
All right, so let's keep going on in the Geomancer. Don't stick your fingers in that far. Just cover them.
They're bleeding. Oh god. So yeah, Obelisk Node controls its first passive ability. Whenever it would perform a mission action, if the Geomancer requires an operative to control an objective marker, you can instead determine control if you have a Obelisk Node marker on that objective. So that's pretty cool. He just essentially has a little zone of 3x things moving around that the Geomancer can use for, for objective control. That's crazy powerful in itself.
So it looks like he can also use the obelisk nodes to operate a hatch too. If you're within an inch of it.
Yes. Yeah. Whenever this operative would perform the operate hatch action, you can open or close a hatchway that's access point is within one of the markers. So again, he can go if he's starting on a marker, but you want to open one like, you know, halfway across the map. Cool, you have 4 APL, so you can open that with a marker that's, you know, 12 inches away in theory.
And I'm assuming you have to spend your APL to actually do this, but you can. Damn, Tyler got street racing going on out there, like Fast and Furious. Absolutely. Holy shit! It's all about family. Jeez.
Just just neighborhood, you know, like family.
We should
just
get Vin Diesel on the podcast.
South Salem is fucking lit tonight, I guess.
I mean, that's just a normal night down here in South Salem.
That's fair.
You know, they there's like a nice little like curve right on my street, so they like to like turn it in as they come into the neighborhood and kind of like zip around it, you know.
That was a good sound effect.
That was actually really yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was a car guy for a long time. If I couldn't do, like, a halfway decent motor sound, like, you know, that would be a shame.
Connor, let's hear your motor sound.
That was closer to, like, Chewbacca.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, Chuck, you're on the spot now. That's a solid, like a Honda?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, definitely a Honda.
Is that VTEC on my 01 Civic that I forgot to change the oil on and then had to take it in? They're like, you gummed up the VTEC. I'm like, yeah, it takes a lot to fuck up a Honda. Yeah. Okay. So do you have to spend an APL then, I assume, to do this?
But it looks like it. Like, yeah. But as far as I can tell, compared to the Cryptek, unless I missed something while reading it, this guy doesn't have any sort of restriction that you can't boost his APL higher than 3. So if he's starting on a node, he's at 4 APL. You got plenty of movement to work or action points to work with on this guy.
That's what I've actually heard too, is that you can actually make him 4 APL if he starts on your Obelisk node matrix.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. That's crazy good. But then that's useful because he's got 3 unique actions. The first one, Molecular Breach. Probably one of the craziest actions they've ever added to the game. It's a lot of text, but the long story short is he selects a guy that's within 6 invisible to him on his own team, and the next time that person he selected wants to move, you can essentially teleport them through walls, including into the Dark and Tomb World ones. Very thematic, very fun. I'm so excited for this.
And he can do it to himself, too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you're always visible and within 6 of yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that'll be pretty fun. Charging him through a wall, or maybe one of the tomb crawlers through a wall. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to somebody think that you can't get to them, and all of a sudden you're in their back line.
You're like, it's literally that I'm behind you, kid meme. It's great.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, the operatives we're about to get to, these little shits here in a little bit, those guys just showing up in your back line, that's gonna be so annoying, you know?
Yeah, because
does that mean, does it limit only one wall? Because like, if you have a full move of, you know, 6 or hell, 7 inches, because some of these guys have 7 inches, you could pass through 2 walls in theory, like on a corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's probably just you pick it up and set it back down, basically.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. The one like thing to note, it doesn't increase your charge, so your charge would still be 6 or 7. But, you know, add another inch because of engagement range, that's still crazy powerful even without the 2 additional inches.
All right, and then
Kinetic Control, it's a standard, you know, Cryptek action. You spend 1 on the Cryptek and select another guy within 6 or on one of your, on the Obelisk nodes, and that guy just immediately does a 1 AP action. So spend 1 on your Cryptek, and then a guy across the map can loot a point or something. Always useful, pretty cool. And then probably the most fun one, Geometric Disturbance. Select a point of terrain. Or select a point on a terrain feature. That point must be visible and within 8. Then separately roll 2d6 for each operative within 2 of that point. If the result is higher than that operative's remaining wounds, inflict a damage on it equal to the difference. So
this is gnarly.
Yeah, crazy cool. I'm assuming that means, like, if they're at, like, 4 health, you roll 2d6 and you get, like, a 9. That means they take 5 damage or something. So that's going to be really good, into especially guardsmen and stuff, because if they're at all tagged by, say, your blast attack, then you select a terrain feature, you're going to likely roll higher than 7. I mean, 2d6 averages 7, so you're going to be doing at least 1 damage to those guys if they've been hit by the blast attack. So that's fun.
Yep. It's that, like, final chip damage.
Yeah.
You know, for, like, when you don't kill. And, like, this is a mean operative. Like, the abilities he has are crazy.
Yeah. Big thing to know on that one, can't do it with conceal, and can't do it if you're in engagement range, but that makes sense. This is essentially a shooting attack, but instead of using a gun, you use a building. It's the craziest thing ever. I love this action so much.
Yeah, give us back, you know, pick a spot on anywhere on a building or whatever for Hand of the Archon. Give us back Ceaseless, and give us back our degenerate gambling, goddammit.
That was one... Yeah, for anybody who did listen to the Kill Team Cascadia or Kill Team Casuals, I did.
I was busy doing homework.
Yeah, Tyler went off on the on the Hand of the Archon and how they're very flavorful, and yet they just get punished. I mean, they should like the punishment, though, right?
Yeah, they're sadists like you.
Masochist.
Whatever.
It's different. Sadist wants to hurt people. Masochist likes being hurt.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Sorry. Yeah. I guess there is a difference then. I don't want to put false words in your mouth.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm just gonna leave that right there. Canoptic Tomb Crawler. So the big bug cannons.
Yep. Pretty cool. One of the craziest profiles we've seen. APL 2, but remember if you start on the point, that's APL 3. 5-inch move makes sense. They're big and tanky. 3-up save and 21 wounds. We are now tied with essentially two shooting Raveners on this team. So that's pretty cool.
Ravener Primes, the leaders.
Yeah.
Or the Patriarch.
Yeah. Yep.
Gnarly.
They have two gun profiles. The Twin Goss Reapers, great name, love it. And then the Transdimensional Isolator, which sounds so fun. You can only bring one of the isolators, which is important to note. So make sure you don't build both of them. Mind you, this team is Necrons. No one's going to know except for Necron players what the guns look like. But Twin kind of gives
it away. I'll know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll know because like Twin means two barrels.
But look, yeah, also like good thing it's limited to one.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh.
But the Twin Goss Reapers, pretty cool profile. 5 dice, hitting out 4s, 4-5, piercing 1, and severe in the first profile. And then it's kind of, that's the focused one. It's kind of like a heavy bolter, essentially, because then the second profile is 4 dice on 4s, 4-5, piercing 1, severe, and then torrent 1. Which, again, if you're on Into the Dark, lethal 5, so that'll be pretty sweet. Kind of means the severe is not as good, but hey, spiking crits.
And then the other gun, the Transdimensional Isolator, is this is the go away gun.
This is indeed the go away gun. We've got 5 dice hitting on 4s at 5-6 damage. That's already pretty damn good profile. But then the dimensional banishment, which is after this operative uses this weapon, if you inflicted damage or attained any critical successes, so that means even if you rolled only a single crit and nothing else, it doesn't matter. This happens. If the target wasn't incapacitated, roll 2d6. If the result is higher than the wound of that current operative, kill it immediately.
Yeah, the target is incapacitated. So the key point to this is you don't even have to like hit with the crit. You just retain the crit.
Yeah, it doesn't need to go through. Damage going through makes it pretty much guaranteed because now you're doing at least 5 damage. So rolling 2d6 on anything other than Marine is probably going to be higher than whatever health it has left.
Mm-hmm. But even on Marines, you have a chance to like now. So okay, so after this operative uses weapon, you inflicted damage. Okay, so it's after the whole shooting attack. So actually, it seems like you could basically like say you got 2 or 3 hits through.
Yeah,
even on a Marine
or a Ravener,
you then roll 2d6 on say they took 15 wounds already, and you're 20 wound Ravener.
Yeah, you're gonna roll likely higher than 5. It's 5 dice, you know, hitting on 4s, but I feel like this is a gun where you definitely want that accurate too. And kind of like Blooded in the previous edition, oops, all my command points are going into this single attack to guarantee that kill if you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
the this needs to go. And this is also like one of the first two operatives that needs to die on the team.
Yeah, with the leader and this guy.
Yeah, this is going to be one you want to, more even than the leader, I think. This is where your Melta gun wants to go in, is that guy.
And this, and the Reanimator also right behind them, like close third, you know.
But there's a lot of key pieces you want to kill here. We'll get over to why that might be a little bit difficult in a second.
Let's talk Reanimator.
I was going to say, last thing for the Tomb Crawler, Weapon Sentinel, he can't use light cover to stay concealed. It's kind of like Ogryn's, where if you're behind it, you can still get shot. You get to retain the dice, but that's that. But then also, this is an Icon Bearer. Just treat its APL as one higher than it normally is.
It's a pretty...
Only on objectives.
Yeah, sorry, only on objectives, but...
I had zero interest in Higher Tech Circle, even though I own the entire team. These guys are sounding... Higher Tech Circle?
Oh, sorry, never mind.
Not Canoptic, yeah. No, I have all... Including all the...
Crypt decks.
different cryptex. So if you want to buy a higher tech circle team, let me know. But these, depends on the price. I'll do anything for $20. But these guys are sounding more and more fun the more I hear about them. I wrote them off as more Necrons, and they have some neat rules like earthquakes and goodbye guns.
Yeah, the amount of this cool rules on this team is very fun. They're definitely just some Necron bullshit, but I feel like in a more fun way for your opponent, because it's kind of cool to make terrain earthquake or just immediately delete a guy versus like Necron bullshit previously has been like, oh, I get back up all the time and I'm constantly healing, which like, yeah, it's very thematic, but it's kind of not fun to deal with if you don't have like a lot of one tap weapons yourself.
All right, next operative, Connor.
Yes, the Reanimator. This one, I think, is practically the exact same as the Reanimator on the Heretic. This is the one way they essentially can reanimate a guy. It's the medic ability. Once per turning point, when a friendly Kinaptic Circle guy dies, if they are visible and within 6 or within your obelisk node matrix, you can use this rule, providing neither this nor that operative. Yeah, don't be in control range. If you do, that friendly operative isn't dead and instead revives at 1 wound and they can immediately perform a dash. That's just a good ability. Medics are always useful.
So, and he's basically got a bolter, but hits on 4s, range 6, lethal 5.
Yeah, like, you know, but you're probably not going to be shooting with this guy unless it's really crazy. He's got like a fist profile from a range 4 dice, but on 4s. And then a slightly better medic ability. Same thing. Pretty much everything for this team is within 6 invisible or on one of your Kinaptic Circle tokens. But you regain 3d3 lost wounds, so that's pretty damn good. That's going to average out to 6 health.
Ooh. That's gnarly.
Yeah.
That's a lot of wounds.
That's a lot of wounds, especially when they've got one guy with 14 health and two guys with 21. And then they've got other ways to heal, too.
So there's a lot of things that interact with the obelisk node matrix. Does that mean if this operative is within... Okay, so if they're both on the obelisk node matrix, then they don't have to be within 6, it looks like.
Yes.
Okay, so you couldn't like have... He couldn't be somewhere else on the board and then just heal them from anywhere. But if they're... But they could essentially be like 12 to 18 inches apart.
Yeah, I think at maximum it's like 12 and a half because the markers are, I think, 20 mils. So then if you're both just towing on the opposite side of the board. But yeah, that's across the map, you know, revive. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. It means stay on your obelisk node matrix.
Yeah. And then the other standard kind of Heretic model we're all used to, the Accelerator. I think it's practically the same. APL 2, 7 move, 4 up save, 7 wounds. He's got a las gun with piercing 1, 4 dice, or range 4 for a shot. Not too impressive, but, you know, might come in handy. And then, like, a weird 3 dice on 4s, 3, 4, lethal 5, and stun. So actually kind of surprisingly decent, like, delaying your enemy melee profile. But he's a comms guy, you know, select someone visible or on the matrix and add one to their APL. And then the other fun ability is select one enemy operative visible and within 3 of the operative, or if both the enemy and the accelerator are on the matrix, until the end of that enemy's next activation, stun them, subtract 1 from their APL. So
looks like it's only 3 inches though, whereas most comms are 6.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I missed that. Yeah, his overcharge is within 3. However, that's fine because you have 3 tokens going around just constantly adding 1 to the APL.
Potentially 4, you know, with the leader.
Very true.
Or once per game, you know?
Yeah. I imagine this guy being really good for, like, you start one of the Tomb Crawlers on the point. He, you know, moves, shoots, you know, then, I don't know, taps the objective, and then he's off the accelerator, obelisk, so this guy moves up and boosts his APL, so you don't have to worry about getting the matrix back on top of him by the next turn.
We got some, so we have a Geomancer, we have 2 Tomb Crawlers, we have the accelerator, the reanimator, and then we get 3 warriors, too.
Yes, Macrocyte warriors. These guys are really tall, as I've been learning looking at the photos, which is kind of annoying. Tall.
It's really annoying. Like, this whole team is really big. Trying to find models for stand-ins and like proxies and kit bashes has been so hard.
Yeah, it's like I found some good ones for the crawlers, which a lot of people pointed out. They're either this like for me, I'm doing my Iron Warriors kit bash, so my crawlers are going to be like the robots from Necromunda, but like, you know, Iron Warriors, so a little bit chaos. Some people have also pointed out they're the same time at, or same scale as the Obliterators or even Terminators, which could be kind of fun. And they feel as tanky as a Terminator.
They're crazy big.
Yeah. They're on 50 mil bases, though.
No, the Tomb Crawlers are on 40. The Geomancer is on a 50.
Tomb Crawlers are on 50s.
Yeah, they're on 50s.
Yeah. I mean, based on what I'm reading on bootleg website, Kill Team Battle Kit,
it's 50s.
So they are chonky boys.
Big boy.
Okay, yeah. So, hey, thankfully I've got some 50s for these proxies. But yeah, large fellas. But then, like we were talking, the three warriors that they just get axed to that don't count for kill-op, which is crazy because these guys are pretty damn good, but you'll see why they don't count in a second. They're essentially a better veteran guardsman, 7-inch move and a 4-up save, still 7 wounds, but that's fine because these guys respawn. That's their big, like, crazy thing is you start with three of them, and any strategic phase where you don't have three of them on the board, cool, it respawns back in your deployment, has to have a conceal order, but that doesn't matter, you just turn it when it activates. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you're going to at least once per turn, 7-inch move, so 9-inch charge, you're going to just be throwing these guys. I feel like your goal each turning point is to lose one of these guys.
Yeah, that
every single turn.
That seems very good.
Turning point one, you're getting one of these guys out in the open.
Yeah, I feel like against new opponents, this might be a really like cheesy move. Put one in the open on engage and either throw them on guard, doesn't matter if you lose them, or just bucket, throw them on, if it's, you know, open, just throw them on an engage out in the open and try and draw their, like, you know, plasma rifle out or something. Try and take out an important operative, 100%. And then this guy just gets back up.
Fish for mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like Chuck said, you want him to charge because anytime this operative is incapacitated by an enemy within two of it, roll a d3. On a 2 or a 3, do that damage equal to the dice result. So you got a little explosion going off when you die. That's crazy fun.
Yeah, these guys are kind of, they're like veteran guardsmen that just have bombs strapped to them.
Yeah, and then for the actual melee profile, it's just 4 dice on 4s, 3-4, no keywords, but again, if you're on the Matrix, accurate too, not too shabby. And then their guns are pretty cool. They've got essentially a bolter hitting on 4s with built-in piercing 1, so it's a slightly worse Rurik Marine. And then the Tesla caster, which is 5 dice, thankfully way cooler than an actual Tesla, but it's 5 dice on 4s, 2-3 damage is the focus profile. Or it's got Living Lightning, 5 dice on 4s, 2-3, Blast 2. So on Tomb World, which these guys are from, Lethal 5 as well.
I don't know that you'll have these guys on the Obelisk Node Matrix much, because it seems like they're just going to be going out like...
Not a ton, but for turn 1, you get to move the Obelisk, I think, 3 inches every turn, so you can set it up. And then again, if you're next to your leader, hey, accurate 2 for that shot.
Yeah, I think that like you will... Definitely camp points with them. I mean, like, especially on CQC maps, you know, you're going to be like on the point on guard with them and like begging people to come in and shoot you. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's like so gnarly.
And in a weird way, you might want them starting on the point because then you could shoot, charge and fight. Because again, if they start on the point or a node control, whatever, it's a 3 APL guardsman for free.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, maybe you teleport them up first thing, you know, like, with your leader. Like, because the flexibility of the team is that, like, you don't, it's kind of like a Battleclade, you know, mixed with Raveners. You know, you take your leader, and you open a door, and you teleport a guy forward, and you use a command point to make him open a door, you know? And then, like, you do another thing, like, maybe... move or like whatever else you can do. Maybe you can see out the door and you can like do an earthquake or something and it's going to hit a few guys on the other side and you can do some chip damage, you know? Like there's so much flexibility and like just like weird shenanigans you can pull.
Very true. And then another thing I just realized as well, you just that movement teleporting through walls, that doesn't restrict you, as far as I can tell reading this, doesn't restrict your movement after that. So you could, you know, use a reposition to teleport through a wall and then still dash up to a doorway that you couldn't quite reach beforehand and then shoot. And again, you're a 3-APL guy most of the time. That's going to be crazy fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool combos.
It's wild. Like the combos on this team are so deep. You know, like it's really hard, I feel, to even grasp how much like trouble this team's going to be.
All right, Connor, what's next? We doing ploys or equipment?
Let's do equipment first, because we've been talking about making your Geomancer one of the points, so let's just get on top of how that works. And that's through the Matrix Manipulator equipment. Once per battle.
Sorry, did you say male manipulator music?
Yes, that's my favorite type of music. Okay. But yeah, male manipulator music is once per battle during a friendly operative's activation or counteraction, you can use this rule. If you do, until the end of that activation slash counteraction, a friendly Geomancer operative is treated as a fourth obelisk node marker.
I feel like you could set this up as a pretty big gotcha where your canoptic, your Geomancer is like kind of like out a little bit, not on your obelisk node matrix. And you got a couple guys next to them and people are thinking, okay, great. Like I'm good. And then you just turn on the matrix and then everybody just nukes you or charges gets their 30 APR or whatever.
I mean, like, so like that's like a 36 inch square in the middle of the board, potentially.
Yeah, because I guess you can, because one thing about the obelisk node matrix is you can like, if they form like a triangle, everything inside that forms it too. It's not just like a line. And so you can make a square, you can make a huge square.
And that's a 6x6 square. So 36 inch on a board.
Yeah, like just like in the middle of the board. That's gross.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they only have to be 6 inches from each other. So like a 12 inch diameter, like straight in the middle of the board. It's gnarly. Like when they need to pull it off, if they need to pull it off, turning point two, if they got the mojo, it's going to be gross, you know?
All right. Awakened obelisk nodes,
which is after revealing this equipment action, roll a D3. You can use the animate obelisk nodes firefight ploy for 0 command points. Number equal to the amount of dice result you just rolled there. So if you rolled 2, you get 2 free command points, essentially. And so, just to cover what that ploy is, animate obelisk nodes. Wow, I'm just having strokes left and right. I'm reading too much. Animate obelisk nodes uses firefight ploy. When it's your turn to activate or counteract, move any number of your obelisk node markers instead. They can move up to 6 inches combined, and the distances are always rounded up to the nearest inch. So if you move a marker 1.5, treat it as 2. For example, you can move one marker 6 inches, 3 markers 1 inch each, or in any combination that doesn't exceed 6 in total. You can also not move them and just use this essentially as a skip activation ploy. So that's pretty powerful in itself.
Yeah, so that's going to be helpful to, since you're only you're an 8 operative team, 8 activation team, but and then you could do that up to 3 times, basically.
Yeah, I feel like this is the actual awakened obelisk nodes equipment. I feel like that's an auto take. Even if you roll a 1, that's a free command point and a free skip. That's going to be, I've played teams with skips, Nemesis Claw. Having that for free is always going to be useful.
It's so necessary for a lot of these teams, and like, it's going to, especially for a lot of the missions, with how this next season is structured, it's going to be make or break, I think.
And into their main opponent of the, what are they called? The guys are coming in the box with Death Watch. That's going to be just pretty good too, because like the Death Watch have a lot of cool guys they want to save their final activation for to then like pop out and nuke your Geomancer, nuke your Tomb Crawler. You can be like, nah, I don't want to go, actually. Skip this activation. You have to move that guy, and I'll get to deal with him before you can shoot me.
And then Nanoscarab Caskets. So whenever a friendly Canoptic Circle is operative is activated, it regains D3 Lost Wounds. I feel like we're seeing, especially in the 5 activation teams, all the 5 operative teams have this, like, heal for D3 when you activate.
Yeah, it's pretty useful. We've already talked about they have a 3D3 healing medic, which is very useful. Speaking of which, holy shit, yeah, that medic, if you just need to heal your Geomancer, activate, and he's already gone this turn, activate your medic, use that Matrix Manipulator equipment, now you can heal your medic even if you're across the board as long as you're on a point itself. But yeah, healing D3 will never not be good on an activation. Like, even if you roll a 1, that's damage breakpoint changes.
Yeah, I think I feel like that's an auto take too. And I think, like I said, I think we're seeing that in a lot of teams. I actually played Death Watch this last weekend, and just having that every time you activate, get 2, 1, 2, 3 wounds or something, change those breakpoints.
Yeah, and then, yeah, very useful. The last equipment is a phase shifter. This is powerful, but I don't think it's an auto take just because situational will depend on the team you're facing. But once per turning point, when an active operative or when an operative is shooting a friendly geomancer operative at the start of the rolled defense die step, you can use this rule, worsen the X of a piercing weapon until the end of that sequence. So it's kind of like the stuff we saw in Legionary's Warp Coven, just lower piercing. That means, though...
That's so good, though.
Yeah.
Like, when are you not going to take that? Like, you know, the ability to lower piercing on 1 to 2 shots when all of, like, your operatives matter, and they're only going to be using their piercing shots against your, like, big guys.
It's only the Geomancer that gets this.
I mean, still.
Like, I just mean it's not necessarily an auto take, to me at least, if they don't have a ton of piercing built in, you know? Like, if they have maybe, like, one plasma, I could see this being skipped for, like, you know, ladders for or sure. something like that.
But yeah, I definitely think
if, equipment, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, anytime there's, like, a Melta or, like, a blaster or something like that coming into play, you're probably taking this. Oh, yeah, though.
Definitely. Because then you can try and use, like, your opponent, you know, turn 2 or turn 3 might forget you have this, and then they move up a Melta. Cool. Like, a Melta's still going to be scary, even with piercing 1, but piercing 1 with all the healing and other ways you have of ignoring damage on this team is a little bit less scary.
All right, so that's the equipment. Let's go back into ploys. We already talked about the one of the firefight ploys, anime obelisk nodes, but let's talk about
do we just want to do strategic ones? Oh, okay, strategic then. Strategy ploys, hypershielding. Whenever an operative is shooting a friendly kinetic circle operative, if your obelisk node matrix is intervening or that friendly operative is within the matrix, you can reroll any defense dice results that are the same. Essentially, ceaseless on defense dice rolls. Good. That's never not going to be good. I feel like it's a little bit more situational considering this team's for the most part saving on threes minus like your smaller guys.
So this is one thing that I was curious about because this says intervening.
I was also going to bring this up.
You don't have to be on it. You just have to be like it becomes a wall essentially that if they're shooting through it, mm-hmm. you get the bonus of this. So,
yep. And that's like one of the things that makes like all of the different, configurations of the node so powerful, like, you know, going from the wall of death to the you know, box to the triangle of power, like, you know, like there's so many different ways this team can set up. They're always going to surprise you. I think this team's tricky, like Blades of Cain is tricky.
I think these guys are trickier than Blades of Cain. I think they're more complicated
in a different way
than Blades of Cain.
It's you know, it's geometry versus like you know, like knowing maybe like art or poetry, you know, using the right strike at the right time, you know, which fits the faction.
Oh, that could be a podcast episode in itself. What form of music is like most or is a kill team?
I mean, that's all Tyler. I don't know anything about music, so.
You're not a music guy, like, Chuck?
No, I listen to a bunch of dumb EDM stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, at least you don't listen to, like, Techno Swing. What is that?
Listen
like,
to what?
Electro Swing, or whatever.
Look it up now, though.
Don't. People who listen to that are fucking weirdos. Well, if you listen to that.
Sounds right up my alley.
I'm sorry.
Electro swing music. It's like swing but EDM. Is an electronic music EDM genre that fuses vintage swing and jazz sounds with modern house and hip hop elements.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
Driven by catchy piano loops and booming beats.
I like both it's those rough. Things.
Hmm. Oh, it's but like together, it's like it sounds like the Six Flags commercial. You know?
That's a great commercial.
But it doesn't sound like that, but like in the soul of it, you know? Like it's soulless.
This is inverting it for me. I liked that commercial growing up. I always wanted to go to like
I mean, like liking the commercial is one thing, but like that music and like the way it was used.
Can that be our 100th episode? We go to Six Flags and record it while at Six Flags, Chuck?
Sure. Yes. You're buying.
Isn't there like a weird little theme park up in Washington?
I mean, there's a water park.
There's a single roller coaster or two, I think, kind of near Seattle, but I think it's mostly a water park.
Is it Wild Waves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go out to Idaho. There's one in Idaho.
Yeah, I've been to the one in Idaho. That was pretty fun. Me and Sierra had a great time there.
I think, though, that we're all kind of like woke and we just get stopped at the border and just get detained.
Yeah, true. By the time we get to our 100th episode, who knows if we can cross borders.
Only like 2.5 months away.
Yeah, I mean, well, man, we're getting woke again. There goes the ad revenue.
Like 2.5 months. Who knows what can change? Release the list.
Maybe he'll be dead. Please, God, it'd be so funny.
God, I was so hopeful this past little while.
I don't know who you're talking about, but we all know who you're talking about. So, trans dynamic amplification.
That was a great transition right there.
I'm not trying to get out any more lists, okay?
What is this? If your matrix is intervening or you are in the matrix, you get ceaseless when shooting. This is an always take, I feel like, or always use, even maybe turn one. Ceaseless on a team with a lot of four up, this is going to be too good, especially when it's a five up dice or five dice rolling most of the time. Even with accurate two, I feel like this is this take all the time.
Have you guys noticed that like the equipment and stuff is like basically always auto takes with these new teams, especially with the change to the crit ops, the tech ops, and the game structure, and the removal of the scouting phase? It's pretty interesting. Yeah, these new teams seem to have
We need to have a moment of silence sometime.
I mean, we did that earlier in the show, but that wasn't specifically for that.
You know, these new teams seem to have a little bit of an advantage in that sense.
They all seem like kind of like close to auto takes. I feel like even through like the last season, I feel like most of them you were taking at least three on Rekkas. I was always taking like three equipment.
I mean, like faction equipment is strong this edition, period. Like, don't get me wrong, but like this seems like there's more that are just like a little bit better, you know.
Sorry, I got distracted. I'm looking up royalty-free electro swing to add to the...
God damn it, Chuck.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so,
what have you done, Tyler? You've awoken.
Sorry about the intro and outro today, kids. You'll know why it was weird.
Zaren's going to be so confused.
All right, crypto, gravitic repulsion.
Once per action. So that's... I don't know if this is a typo. I feel like it's not, because this seems crazy good if it's just once per action. But once per action, the first time an enemy operative would move within the obelisk node matrix, the distance is treated as an additional 1 inch. Note, this means that if the enemy operative doesn't have sufficient move distance, e.g. it's at the end of the move, then it can't enter the matrix.
So this is like razor wire or whatever for...
Yeah, it's like razor wire or the grav drone, I think, on... the Pathfinders, crazy good. Anytime you can make your like opponent maybe not be able to charge one of your guys is always going to be useful.
Well, and there's nothing you can't shut down the obelisk node matrix. You can't shoot the obelisk nodes.
Yeah. Right?
So you can basically create a wall of razor wire or an accessible terrain piece in the middle of the board anywhere.
Oh God, yeah, because this could also stack with barricades and razor wire and other shit. Right? Like there's no...
Gross. Yeah,
there's nothing like where it's like the core rule where your APL can only be modified up or down one, right?
I don't see anything that would stop it. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments.
Yeah, our bad. We're not rules experts. We're rules enjoyers.
I don't really enjoy them. Soul drain.
True. I hate rules that are annoying to me at the time. Otherwise, they should only help me. Soul drain. What I do to Chuck every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9:30. But more importantly, it's
100%.
Yeah, I was expecting some form of laughter there. Come on, buddy.
I was muted and I couldn't find the mic.
Yeah, you just raised your hand. But soul drain is whenever an enemy operative is within your matrix or it's fighting or retaliating against a kinetic circle that's within the matrix, subtract one from both damage stats of that enemy operative's melee weapons to a minimum of two until the end of that action. Just damage reduction. Good
damage reduction, yeah. Always especially good. If you make your obelisk node matrix like death bubble. especially like, so you can create an entire 36 inch square zone or whatever where you're minus one damage.
Remember, the 36 would only last for a single turn and it has to be on your action. But it does mean you could do some weird stuff where if you activate your Geomancer with this ploy up, then use that equipment, you could charge and have like a super defensive fight work out for you because he's got shock, stun, and now reducing damage.
Yeah, it's there's some wild stuff, you know. I'm really looking forward to CB's dissertation on this team and like all of the different geometric configurations that we can do with this and their optimal plays.
Yeah, that's, I didn't even think about the fact there's going to be like full on graphs people are going to make for this. It's going to be like a I know you guys weren't necessarily part of the Minecraft generation, but like one of the things that's a universe.
I was the first Minecraft.
You were like generation. Playing it.
What are you talking about? Okay. It was alpha.
That's fair. I just mean like I know, you know, like for people around my age and younger, Minecraft is like an integral part of the childhood. Doesn't matter like where you grew up or how everyone had played Minecraft. But one of the popular things that you always saw spreading around was like little graphs people would draw of how to make like patterns in Minecraft with like circles or archways for roofs and stuff. So I'm expecting to see that with all these little points for the matrixes.
Yeah, you know, KT cards. This is something I want to see. I want to see node matrix strategy and layout suggestions. You know, like I want to have like a whole subsection.
I mean, you know, there's going to be nerds smarter than us that are going to basically like find the optimal node matrices for each of the new maps.
Absolutely. I want maps online. If one person has them, everyone should have them. Netlist forever. No, don't netlist stuff. Let on your own. Have some fun.
Do you know that Pixabay has over 4,700 no copyright electro swing songs?
No, I don't. I would never.
Well, now I do.
You do now.
I dislike people who like electro swing generally. Nothing personal to any of our listeners or subscribers.
There goes 14 Patreons. Kind of and, yeah.
God, this would you know.
This is what does it. This is what finally gets us canceled.
Electro swing.
Yeah,
electro swing. You know, I've had some bad experiences with some weirdos who like it.
So let's tell me about one of your. Chuck. Have I?
Guys, I'm right here.
Which weirdo besides Connor? Which weirdo in particular? Like you can just DM me.
You know.
So Tyler, you can just tell me, is electro swing like death by a thousand cuts? Is it a pound of flesh?
Absolutely. You know, it's like every time I hear it, it does feel like a death by a thousand cuts. Yes. And I think it's like more accurate than that's like the most accurate description of that. And also the most accurate use of that I've ever heard, because I've only ever heard that really one other time.
Well, I'm going to talk to my wife and talk to my therapist and see what they think about electro swing, and then we'll just go from there. So
sounds good.
We talked about anime, obelisk, node matrix. Let's talk about shield flare, firefight play. That's your turn. That's you, Connor.
I know. Sorry, yours was in a slightly different order than mine, so I was trying to find it.
I'll talk to the Spanish people.
No, I don't speak Spanish. Not anything against them. I'm not good at Spanish. Shield flare.
So why do you have to wait? Why do you have to bring up the like not anything against them? You just have to say you don't.
Because the way I said no, you say a little. Listen, the political environment we're in, Chuck. I want people to know I'm an ally. I saw a meme the other day that said like, if you're a straight white guy, I need you to start wearing rainbow shirts all the time with like a shirt that says, "Listen, I'm not with like the others," and that got to me a little bit. I was like, you know, that's fair.
It just seems like that, like, one doff protest too much, where you're like, I don't have anything against them, but...
I don't know what that's referring to.
All right, talk about the shield flare.
Shield flare. Essentially, this is just a scratch. Uses firefight ploy when attack does normal damage on a friendly operative. If they're, you know, the attack's being intervened by a node matrix, or they're on the node matrix, just ignore the damage. Very good. Just a scratch on a team with a bunch of healing... And thank you, saves, thumbs up, too good.
Okay, and then nodal response.
I think that's a brain term, but it's also a firefight ploy that you can use during a friendly kinetic circle's activation before or after it performs an action. You can either change one of the strategy ploys used during this turning point, only pay additional command points if that ploy costs more, or use a strategy ploy now, pay its command points as normal. So this is kind of like the comms guy in Phobos, where you can just change a ploy if you used one during the strategic phase, or if you didn't, you can now pay an additional command point to get it right then and there. I think this one kind of confuses me every time I read it.
All right, so let's take a look. I was looking at more electro swing stuff. Before and after print. You can either change one of your strategy ploys, the user and turn your point, additional piece, or you can use a strategy ploy. So basically, it lets you. So like you can either change one of the strategic ploys that you used.
And I'm just confused by the only pay additional command points if that ploy costs more, because all these ploys.
I think what that is, right? I think with that's basically if like what's the team that makes your strategic plays cost more?
Inquisition?
Yeah. So I think that's what that means, is basically like if Inquisition did the like.
Oh yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Like if they made one cost two and then you want to swap to it and still technically cost two. Okay, gotcha. Or if you didn't use any ploys, now you can activate one, but it will be technically two because you're paying for the firefight ploy.
Yeah, so you can, but well, that's really good though, because you can like in the middle you can turn on something that you didn't have before, or
this is going to be one where it's like maybe hyper shielding when you're getting shot out on a tomb crawler or something like that. You might want to turn that on, or for your leader again, lots of cool combos you can pull off.
So you can you have to do it during your activation though.
Yes.
Before or after performs an action.
Hey, maybe it's the first turn and you didn't turn on that soul drain. Now you can turn it on because you see a charge activating for your geomancer or something.
And then sacrificial thrall.
This is the essentially grab a guy that's not the geomancer when they're shooting at the geomancer or fighting the geomancer, and they instead fight that target. Always going to be useful.
Yeah, look out, sir.
Yeah, look out, sir. Thank you. I just couldn't remember the...
Get down, Mr. President.
Yeah. This is a reason why I think you should always want one of the basic responding warriors within three of your leader, because even if they shoot the melt at your leader, no, they didn't.
Yeah, that's super good way to help out, especially because you just bring that nerd back if you didn't lose two of them.
Exactly. It's just too good. That's another reason why I was thinking kind of that reduced piercing equipment might not be as useful, because maybe you want ladders more than that, and you'll just have to spend a command point once or twice. But hey, you also have ways of generating free command points through equipment, so nice. But that's the team. They seem pretty cool. There's a lot going on. But I think now that I've kind of read through it like two or three times, they're not that complicated, especially like if you're familiar with the rules, they'll be a weird ass team to anyone that hasn't seen them yet. Was that intentional?
No, I just fat fingered the.
Okay, I was like, that doesn't really, match.
I guess I was like,
did I miss a joke there? I said by accident.
Rock and stone.
So,
well, it is a geomancer that deals with rocks.
Yeah, shout out to Sean. They get recon and security as their archetypes, which normally would be one thing, but now it's also the new TAC ops.
And so security's apparently not as good.
Security's not as good.
Some people say it's still good. Who fucking knows? I don't read.
I feel like plant banner might be good, because if you plant banner and then you protect it with your obelisk node matrix.
Oh, well, because they can still pick it up. And the obelisk matrix doesn't make it difficult, as far as I can tell, for your opponent to do actions on stuff.
Yeah, but it makes it harder to get to it.
If you turn that, I can see that.
So I mean, if you put a barricade down and then you got your...
Well, you can't put a barricade down. The banner has to be in your opponent's half.
Okay.
Yeah, banner's very fun, like looking, but I don't think it'll be that good. It seems real difficult to do.
Yeah,
so... Is there a limit on how many times you can plant banner? What if you just plant a whole bunch of banner? I don't see anything that says.
I don't think it does.
Just rush and keep planting banners.
So
the problem is
overwhelmed with banners.
Because it's the banners have to be on your opponent's half and more than 5 inches away from both edges.
Yeah, but that's it. Like you could just keep stacking more banners. More banners.
Where the hell is banner? There we go. No, that's retrieval. Where the hell is banner? What's it called?
Plate.
Plant Manor?
Plant Manor?
Yeah.
Why can I not find this? There we go. Jesus. Weird. It was just not loading. I guess you could just keep planting Banner. It might be good with a node matrix like turn 2 or 3 where your Geomancer can do something.
Or if you just have last activation.
Yeah.
Just move and
plant Banner. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Easy VP. Plant Banner is good.
Oh, or if a friendly operative has already performed this action during the battle. There we go. Like, there was something that would make this not good. So you can only plant a Banner a single time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, but I just don't think this is that good of a attack op.
Yeah. See, if I would have kept reading.
That's okay. I was like, there was something that made this not good. Martyr is just fun.
You know what the really dumb thing is that to get this Electro Swing, I have to do like a trial. I'm totally gonna
just look it up on YouTube.
I want it to be our intro and outro.
Electro Swing. Just have a computer. Don't fuck AI. You've all heard my stance on this.
No, I only use AI to make weird porn stuff to send you. By the way, did you like that Cortana and
you thankfully Sonic did not video? Send me anything like that.
I'm gonna now.
Like Sonic 30 feet video.
Cortana, yeah.
Right?
What?
He sent it to me. It was solid.
Connor's like, what? What's?
God, aren't you paying attention to the other group chat?
No.
Jeez.
Listen.
Sorry, Van.
I got added to one for my fantasy league, so that's been plenty of notifications.
You playing Is fantasy?
Shadowheart in it?
I am playing fantasy. I'm always our league's 12th man, and the running joke is because I don't pay attention. Yeah, none of us are like particularly football
Connor,
players, right? Like American Connor. Football?
Connor, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Me and Shirty, we are football guys.
Oh, you're
so.
You are football guys.
So we need you. So here's what you start.
Got Jalen Hurts on my lineup. He's pretty good. He won the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts
is good. He won a Super Bowl. But I mean, it's too late for us to help you draft, but we can help you make picks. So before you lock your team every week, mm-hmm. you got to lock it on Thursday, by the way.
Yeah, I know
before
that.
Before Thursday, you run this shit by Nick and I, mm-hmm. and we. We'll make sure we will bring you out of the gutter. We'll bring you out of the cellars. You will not be the laughing stock of your league.
I don't mind being the laughing stock because it's more fun of my. I appreciate it and we'll definitely do this so this year I can like do crazy good. But it was more of the thing was it was Connor's gamble was what we called it, where people would, you know, pretty much be guaranteed a good win against me because half the time I'd forget to hit optimized lineup or, you know, set the lineup, except for like three of the weeks in the season where I actually would. So then they'd have to fight for the match instead of just getting a free one. So it was always a fun thing of like who wanted to be the asshole that would remind me to set my lineup.
Yeah. We're going to help you out. We got you.
All right, sweet. I don't think any of the guys I play fantasy with listen to this. So we're set.
Probably not.
I love the enthusiasm for the sports ball fantasy.
Did I ever tell you that I got kicked out of my fantasy league after like 20 years?
Wait, why? Fantasy's been going on that long.
This was actually like 5 years ago. I got kicked out of my league. The commissioner screwed me over, because he let somebody basically like, fuck off. Sorry, I'm trying to get this music. He let somebody basically substitute a player who outside of the substitution window. So which meant I had lost the game because he brought in a kicker. I lost the game. I would have won the game had he not been able to make the substitution, which he shouldn't have. I then went on to the next game. And the commissioner's like, oh, you're just going to lose the next game anyways. I went on the next game to demolish the guy. And I would have won the Super Bowl that year. So I might have bitched him out on Christmas Day because I was pissed that he screwed me over. So
that seems valid.
Yeah, that's a fair reason.
You know, sounds like cheating.
I was not invited back next year.
Was it people like, how'd you know these people?
It was people that I used to work with at Blockbuster that I'd known for like you know, 20 years.
Do you still talk to them or not anymore at all?
No, I don't talk to them.
Well, you know what? They cheated.
I did run into one of them actually at the book signing I went to a couple months ago.
Were they chill or were they like, oh, it's you?
Oh, no, he was actually super chill. I don't think he cares about it, but it was the other guy. But the commissioner had it out for me because of other things too. So maybe we'll talk about it in the post show. But anyways, yeah, I got kicked out. I was in the league for like 19 years and then got booted because I bitched out the commissioner.
Wow.
So
it sounds like more than that.
Yeah.
Allegedly so. Only bitched out the commissioner. My experience with fantasy football has been the show, the league, and then barely paying attention to my own.
Yeah, that's fantasy football. You spend $5 on an app. You tell the app how your scoring system is, and then you just auto pick from that. But Nick and I will help you going forward. Okay.
Nice. All right. Every Thursday, just text me.
No, we gotta start this on Wednesday night. Okay. Because yeah, so, yeah. Anyways, so any gentlemen thoughts on Electroswing? I mean, Canoptic Circle.
They're pretty cool. As you've been getting photos, you and Nick, and for pretty much anyone in KTC's hobby channel, I'm trying to build the team. And like Tyler said, these goddamn respawning warriors are way too tall. I don't know what to do.
All of them are so big. They're like big, but like weird size. There's no other models that are similar size.
Yeah, they're really tall and they're really thin, but like not so thin that my original plan of like Servo Skulls would work because they're pretty chunky, but they're like standing on little rebar steps. Chuck's being murdered by an... I don't even know.
That was just my squeaky chair.
But yeah, they're pretty cool. I'm excited to build them. I think finally decided on just saying screw it. The warriors are too tall. I'll put them on some stilts and call it good, or stack up some rubble and just use Necron warriors as like chaos androids. But I'm excited. I'm building up my geomancer right now.
Yeah. What are you making your geomancer out of?
I'm using the Master of Possession, the cool like chaos marine model with the like goat horn that I chopped off, helmet. I chopped that off, but I'm using the body as a base and probably the staff and arm, but we're still debating. And then the Iron Hands Legion Praetor, because, you know, I'm doing Iron Warriors. It's another teched up looking guy, but I like his helmet and I like his backpack because I like, you know, using the Mark II stuff. And more importantly, he's got a cool little servo skull crab on his shoulder. So easily that's one of the coolest bits I've ever purchased from Warhammer.
Nice. Good news is I got the song I wanted and canceled the trial subscription. So
nice. We're all set, baby. Tyler is never listening to this episode.
Tyler doesn't listen to our episodes anyways.
That's right.
I do. I listen to parts of them sometimes.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
On purpose?
Yeah. Yes. You know, I like to check in every once in a while.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts? I mean, let's get a, you know, performance review here.
Yeah. You know, like I don't find my voice grating. And you guys do a good job too. So.
I feel like after having done this podcast for now 86 episodes, I can listen to myself a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Like listening to myself in the first few episodes, I was like, oh God. Oh my God. Like, that's what I sound like. Is that my voice? Is that my voice?
Yeah, absolutely.
And still every time I listen though, I hear Connor and I think, oh my God, is that his voice? Oh, aww. Aww, I'm just kidding, buddy. I love you. So anyways, well, that's Canoptic Circle. I had totally written them off as like more Necrons. And you know what? I've never actually played against Hyrotech Circle.
What?
Yeah.
I've never played against them. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've only ever tabled Hyrotech Circle. So
yeah, never played against them. Never matched up in, you know, I've actually played quite a few games this year in tournaments and stuff and big tournaments, and I've never actually matched up against them. So
yeah, so bring it. Yeah. Hyrotech Circle players,
bring a like, bunch of crit, or you're not
a challenge.
God damn it. Yeah. Next Tacoma,
but yeah, bring it to CritCon if we get some of the good Hyrotech Circle players.
Yeah, CB
or something. Yeah, CB, Shane, you know, or the new teams. I was talking with Adrian this morning. He was saying
Bonavento,
I may come out. Yeah. I may come out for Killscream 4 CritCon. So everyone, you should also come out and be as cool as Adrian and you know, everyone else, Cam, you know, anyone else who's coming from a long ways to support our event and try to win a golden ticket and have some fun and win some cool prizes and just participate in a independent event. Come out to the Cascadia Regional Independent Tabletop Convention or CritCon and Killscream 4.
Yeah, October 24th, 25th, 26th. Tyler, we got to get that cup ordered, by the way. That's on the to-do list.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that this weekend.
Yeah, apparently you've named it the Chaos Cup.
Oh, that's Chaos Cup. I mean,
yeah, I found that out listening to the other podcast.
I mean, you know, like I thought we had talked about that
briefly. I don't know. We may have. One of two things happened. Either we did and I forgot about it, or you just imagined we had the conversation. These are both very likely.
Both valid. Both valid. You know, like, and that's how it goes. If you name something like that, I'd go with it.
Yeah. So, Connor, good job doing your homework.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So next week we are going to talk about Kill Team. This was a lot of Kill Team. I don't know. I feel like Greg's going to be pissed.
We started off good. Like, we had a good 12 minutes of no Kill Team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, definitely. This was like the most non-Kill Team intro.
And I have found a new genre of music to just dive deep into.
Please don't.
Yeah, I can't wait. So, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for our Patreons, patreon.com/FoxCascadiaPodcast, CascadiaTabletop.com for all your CritCon tickets. DiceRoad.BigCartel.com. Is the Orb shirt still on sale?
Yeah. Orb shirts will be going for another week and a half.
Nice. Sweet. I will buy one Thursday.
At Lowbrow Minis on Instagram, at Painting Cave Minis on Instagram is me, at Spanaway on everything is Connor. Also, I've been talking to Greg from Bridge City Hobbies, who's going to be the main sponsor for Killscream 4 for prize support. And his quote he sent me during this show is, "The CritCon box is pretty full. We may have overdone it a touch."
Nice.
So got Tomb World, Kill Teams, paintbrushes, paints, combat patrols, Nemesis Claw loadouts.
Nemesis Claw loadouts?
I don't know. That's what he said. He said Nemesis Claw loads, and I'm hoping he means loadouts.
Nice.
So, Board Bard is going to be sponsoring the team tournament too. Don't forget that's on Friday, the 24th.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. Glad we can have that.
Connor, who's going to be your teammate?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm doing that one. I think I might do the Heresy stuff on Friday.
Connor,
I want to do Heresy. Yeah, voice crack because I'm 12.
That's fair. So, we got Heresy. Did you get your ticket for Heresy yet?
No, I'm buying my tickets this Thursday.
Are you grinding? Are you going for that golden ticket, buddy?
We got two of them on the line.
Come on, Connor.
I said, you and Nick and we have talked about how I built my Warp Coven. Warp Coven, pretty fun team, but I legitimately feel gross playing them. They're just so overloaded. They're really fun, but it's like a holy shit. This is just like.
Just be gross.
It's
Killscreen 4. Just be gross.
It's a golden ticket. It's
two golden tickets on the line. You know, like, just because like some of the best players already have theirs doesn't mean that you can slack off, you know?
It's a chance to go play in Atlanta with your dad.
That's a good point. Do we get to see what people select for their teams before that? Or is that all hidden until day of?
I mean, you know, like it's like 2 weeks before, so you be prepared. I expect you.
Well, my big thought, right, is I might do my Nemesis Claw and sweat it out, but I need to like try and figure out, is there just going to be a fuck ton of new Death Watch teams? Because I
think there's going to be
that's why I'm kind of thinking Nemesis Claw. I think they work a little bit better just because I have more experience with them, and I also just think they'll probably have more fun in a Death Watch.
How does the I guess the Melta, you know, but like the Aegis, how do you kill him?
I mean, Melta, or I just ignore him. Like, he'll be annoying, don't get me wrong, but I can throw a skin thief into him and just stall him long enough.
All right, so you going Warp Coven? Are you going?
I don't know. Nemesis. My Warp Coven are built. I need to get them painted, but my Nemesis Claw is all done, so.
Well, I think you keep grinding.
Or maybe I'll play Necrons.
Maybe. I think you got to commit soon though, because there's less than 7 weeks left, and you got to start grinding. You got to get together with Dad, and have him run you through the gauntlet, and get you trained up. So, I mean, this is your chance. You go to Atlanta with your dad, Brandon Bean, with Sean, with Zach, with Eric.
Yeah, congrats, Eric, now that he's...
Olive?
Yeah, Eric finally properly knows, so we can talk about it, and I won't feel like if he doesn't get it, I cursed him, so thank God.
Yeah, so you got to get that grind on, so... But, get your grind on. Anyways, thanks for listening. We appreciate
it. Love you. Good night.
That's really quite clever, isn't it?